my left, you will exit the doors to your right. If you are sitting in front of me, to my right, you will exit the courtroom doors in the rear. If you notice anything suspicious, please alert the nearest police officer. And in the event of an emergency, please remain calm and follow directions of the police. Thank you.
The Honorable, the Chief Justice, and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Oyez, 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 all persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court.
Justice Kavanaugh has the opinion of the court this morning in case 23975, Seven County Infrastructure Coalition versus Eagle County, Colorado.
In 1970, Congress passed and President Nixon signed the National Environmental Policy Act, known as NEPA. NEPA applies to certain infrastructure projects that are built, funded, or approved by the federal government, say a new highway, or bridge, or stadium, or airport, for example. This case involves a proposed new railroad line in rural Utah. Before such a major infrastructure project can go forward, NEPA requires federal agencies to first prepare an environmental impact statement, known as an EIS. The EIS is, in essence, a report, and that report must address the significant environmental effects of a proposed project and identify feasible alternatives that could mitigate those effects. NEPA was the first of several landmark environmental laws passed by Congress in the 1970s. Subsequent statutes included the Clean Air Act amendments of 1970, the Clean Water Act of 1972, and the Endangered Species Act of 1973, among others. Unlike those later enacted laws, however, NEPA imposes no substantive environmental obligations or restrictions. Importantly, NEPA is a purely procedural statute. It simply requires an agency to prepare an EIS, a report, before a major project goes forward. That report, the EIS, need not weigh environmental consequences in any particular way. Rather, an agency may weigh environmental consequences as the agency reasonably sees fit under its governing statute in any relevant substantive environmental laws. So NEPA is a procedural cross-check, not a substantive roadblock to any major new projects. The goal of the law is simply to inform agency decision-making, not to paralyze it. Or at least that was the idea. In this case, a federal agency, the U.S. Surface Transportation Board, considered a proposal by a group of seven Utah counties for the construction and operation of an 88-mile railroad line in northeastern Utah. Under federal law, the Surface Transportation Board determines whether to approve construction of new railroad lines. The railroad line here would connect Utah's oil-rich Uinta Basin, a rural territory roughly the size of the state of Maryland, to the national rail network. By doing so, the new railroad line would facilitate the transportation of crude oil from Utah, ultimately to refineries in Louisiana, Texas, and elsewhere. And the project would bring significant economic development and jobs to the isolated Uinta Basin by better connecting the basin to the national economy. For that proposed 88-mile Utah railroad line, the Surface Transportation Board prepared an extraordinarily lengthy EIS, more than 3,600 pages. The board's EIS fully addressed the environmental effects of the proposed railroad line. But the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit nonetheless faulted the board for not sufficiently considering the environmental effects of projects separate from the construction and operation of the railroad line itself, primarily the environmental effects that could ensue from increased oil drilling in the Uinta Basin and increased oil refining along the Gulf Coast of Louisiana and Texas. On that basis, the Court of Appeals disapproved the Surface Transportation Board's EIS. And the Court of Appeals therefore rejected the board's decision to approve the 88-mile railroad line. As a result, construction of the railroad line still has not begun, even though the board approved the project back in December 2021. We now reverse the Court of Appeals for two reasons. First, the Court of Appeals did not afford the board the substantial judicial deference required in NEPA cases. When assessing significant environmental effects and feasible alternatives for purposes of preparing an EIS under NEPA, an agency will invariably make a series of fact-dependent, context-specific, and policy-laden choices about the depth and breadth of its inquiry, and also about the length, content, and level of detail of the resulting EIS. For their part, courts should afford substantial deference and should not micromanage those agency choices so long as they fall within a broad zone of reasonableness. As this court's cases have previously emphasized on several occasions, and we underscore again today, inherent in NEPA is a rule of reason, which ensures that agencies determine whether and to what extent to prepare an EIS based on the usefulness of any new potential information to the decision-making process. Over the years and decades, however, some courts have instead engaged in overly intrusive judicial review in NEPA cases. These rulings have slowed down or blocked many infrastructure projects, and in turn caused litigation-averse agencies to take ever more time and to prepare ever longer EISs. All of that has led to more agency analysis of separate projects, more consideration of attenuated effects, more exploration of alternatives, more speculation and consultation and estimation and litigation. Delay upon delay, so much so that, to borrow Justice Rehnquist's words from one of our prior cases, the process sometimes seems to border on the Kafkaesque. Fewer infrastructure projects make it to the finish line. Indeed, fewer projects make it to the starting line. Those that survive often end up costing much more than is anticipated or necessary, both for the agency preparing the EIS and for the builder of the project. And that, in turn, means fewer and more expensive railroads, airports, highways, bridges, stadiums, and the like. And that also means fewer jobs as new projects become difficult to finance and build in a timely fashion. A course correction of sorts is appropriate to bring judicial review under NEPA back in line with the statutory text and common sense. Congress did not design NEPA for judges to hamstring new infrastructure and construction projects. As this court has said before, the role of a court in reviewing the sufficiency of an agency's consideration of environmental factors is a limited one. The proper principle of judicial review in NEPA cases, therefore, can be succinctly summarized: deference to the agency. Second, in addition to failing to afford sufficient deference to the Surface Transportation Board, the Court of Appeals' decision in this case was mistaken on the merits. The Court of Appeals erroneously required the board to address environmental effects from projects that are separate in time or place from the 88-mile railroad project at hand, that is, effects from potential future projects or from geographically separate projects. Contrary to the Court of Appeals' opinion, the EIS did not need to address the environmental consequences of future oil drilling in the basin. The potential oil drilling is distinct from construction and operation of the railroad line. Likewise, the EIS did not need to address environmental effects from increased activity at highly regulated oil refineries along the Gulf Coast of Texas and Louisiana. Both of those projects are well outside the scope of the 88-mile railroad project in rural Utah. For those reasons and others explained in our opinion, we reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals. Justice Sotomayor has filed an opinion concurring in the judgment, which Justice Kagan and Justice Jackson have joined. Justice Gorsuch took no part in the consideration or decision of this case.
Mr. Clerk, the court will entertain motions for admission to the bar of the court.
Charles McKenzie.
Mr. McKenzie.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of my son, James Andrew McKenzie, of the Bar of the District of Columbia. I am satisfied that he possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and your son will be admitted.
Brandon Northington.
Mr. Northington.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of Abigail Don Edelstein of the Bar of Florida. I'm satisfied she possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and Ms. Edelstein will be admitted.
Matthew Haverstick.
Mr. Haverstick.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move for the admission of Miranda Lou Dang, Francis Gerard Natariani, and Samantha G. Zimmer of the Bar of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I am satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from the National Bar Association, presented by Kristen Clark.
Ms. Clark.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys from the District of Columbia, Malik Nkrumah Drake. From Florida, Sue-Ann Nicole Robinson. From Georgia, Natalina Nelly Rodriguez DePina Daniel, Lindsay Christina Lee, and Veronique Daniela Verneau. From Maryland, Alicia April John and Nicole Lemon. From Michigan, Charisse Suzette Williams. From New York, Bernarda Alta Gracia Villalona. From Texas, Judge Veretta L. Frazier. Larry F. Taylor Jr. and his wife, Judge Nicole Renee Taylor, and Julie M. Wenna. From West Virginia, Mishia LaShawn Poor. From Virginia, Carol Louise Alston. I am satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from the New York State Bar Association, presented by Dominic Napolitano.
Mr. Napolitano.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys. From California, Jessica May Ventura Sumakawa. From Maryland, Charles Frederick Johnson II. From New York, Fred Leonard Abrams, Rosemary Abahi Amey, Shalal Brown, Janet Lisa Brown, Karen Hillary Charlton, Stacy Patrick Dekua Rubin, Jonathan Allen Hurst, Jukai Helen Kamampi, Linda Locasio, Kelsey Alexis Medard, Carrie Ann Morrissey, Mary Elizabeth Morrissey, Addison O'Donnell, Nadia Mahid Prevesi, my wife, Frances Rubias, Amibi Rockman, Brandon Scott Sand, Matthew Joel Sava, Lauren Michelle Schulman, Michael Anthony Scotto, Dennis Ryan Smith, Kathleen Marie Sweet, Vivian Diane Wesson, Senyun Reed Wee, and Sanji Wan, Renee Marie Andre from the Virgin Islands. I am satisfied that each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from the Chaminade High School Lawyers Association, presented by Daniel LaRose.
Mr. LaRose.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys. From the state of New York, William Michael Cooney, Stephen Vincent Dalton, Robert Joseph Federal, Andrew McConnell Gross, William James Kelleher III, Maureen Adele McConnell, Sean Patrick McGonigal, Dennis Patrick O'Brien, Luke James O'Brien, and from the Commonwealth of Virginia, Frank John Russo III. I am satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted. If all of the applicants will stand, the clerk will administer the oath. But before he does so, I would like to extend to each of you a warm welcome as a member of the bar of this court and an officer of the court.
Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear that as an attorney and as a counselor of this court, you will conduct yourself uprightly and according to law, and that you will support the Constitution of the United States, so help you God?
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until Thursday, the 5th of June at 10 o'clock.